First of our featured artists tonight, we're especially glad to be bringing here in this place on this night, in a way because, at least from Duff's standpoint, she's been thus far untapped, rich community resource. Jan Greenberg has been writing fiction now for years, has taught the writing of fiction at secondary and collegiate levels, grade school levels, I believe, as well, so at every level of education, and has been publishing book after book with Farrar, Straus, and Giroux of her stories and novels directed at young audiences and old as well. And since we are all here adults and all here young in some aspect of our being, I feel very confident that there will be a connection made here. So it really gives me, on behalf of the Duff's River Styx at Duff series, a pleasure to bring a new friend for me, an old friend for many of you, and someone we hope will be back again, Jan Greenberg.
Those of you who are familiar with me and my work know that as my three daughters grow from young girls to young women, the characters in my novels seem to be growing older too. For the last 6 months, I found myself moving into a new genre for me, that of adult fiction. And I must say that this transition process has been somewhat difficult. I'm reminded of a comment that Somerset Maugham once said, that there are three rules for writing a good novel. Unfortunately, nobody's figured out what they are. So now I'm experimenting with new voices and new forms, and I appreciate your all being here tonight to share these new voices with me. As usual, I'm concerned with difficult relationships. Consider this short story a work in progress, and figure that anything that doesn't sound quite right to you will be revised by the time the story's finished. Concerning the distribution of objects, the last time Kate Lazaroff saw Duffy Straus, they'd walked to Central Park, where she curled herself in a ball and wept into his lap. At first she cried because that seemed appropriate for a parting scene. But after a while, the tears flowed naturally due to all the sweet things he said to her. The line she remembered best and held on to as if it were a sign, more prophetic than an oracle, was, "I'll never find anyone else like you." Then he'd taken off for Peru with his new girlfriend, Glynis, and Kate hadn't heard from him in months, except for one postcard, a black and white photograph of a llama, with a note in his carefully slanted script on the back. "Left stranded in Cusco, something about my attitude." She scotch-taped it, llama side out, on her bathroom mirror, but each time she faced her reflection, she found herself flipping it over to the other side. Eventually, the tape broke, and the llama landed face down in the toilet. She watched the edges curl, then flushed the card away. But it would take more than the New York City sanitation system to flush Duffy Straus out of her head. However vague his message, it filled her with a childish hope. For that reason, she borrowed a friend's car and was rushing to Kennedy after his brief phone call from Miami that morning. As she sped down the freeway, gray tenements, billboards, street signs, and a stream of cars bled into a continuous field painting. She imagined missed connections and crossed wires. Her heart throbbed with the implications of their meeting. At the gate, she spotted him immediately amidst a crush of travelers. His hair was longer, framing his face with a halo of dark curls that made his eyes appear larger and reminded Kate of a portrait by Caravaggio she'd once seen at the Villa Borghese. A tremor of excitement came over her. She resisted hurling herself into his arms. Still gorgeous as ever, he said, and proceeded to swing her around as passengers at baggage claim gaped. All the way to his parents' apartment, she sang with the radio and giggled like a child. It was hard to concentrate on the road. She couldn't keep her eyes off him. He'd returned from places she could only imagine, making him appear mysterious, as if he'd just stepped out of the pages of a National Geographic. Yet in her mind, she could trace every contour on his body, recall the slightest variations in his voice. They'd met a year ago at the university where Kate was an assistant professor of archaeology. She lectured on such topics as radiocarbon dating, sonar scanning, and paleo-Indian sites of North America. Undergraduates were generally attracted to the more glamorous aspects of ancient cultures, Tutankhamun's gold or erotic Pompeian mosaics. Thus, her classes drew a small but dedicated group, Duffy Strauss appearing among them one spring term for still unaccountable reasons, or so it seemed to Kate, who regarded him as a gift she'd received by chance. She noticed him right away slouching in the front row. He wore the ritual clothing of his generation, jeans and a shirt, loose-fitting, 100% cotton, high-top black sneakers and an army surplus jacket. The red bandana tied around his forehead added just the right note of studied casualness. He seemed to be writing down every word she said, even when she wasn't speaking. Much later in the term, she discovered his notebook was blank, except for daily shopping lists, which he wrote in long rows, neat as an accountant's ledger. Archaeology, she told the class, is concerned with the distribution of objects in time and space. Your job is to identify these objects. My job is to give you the skills to accomplish this. The beautiful boy in the front row raised his hand. Is another definition of archaeology the study of garbage? He grinned at her. Crude, but probably adequate for your purposes, she said coolly. How do you differentiate good from bad garbage? He persisted. Here comes trouble, she remembered thinking. Sometimes you have to follow your instincts. After class, she tried to find out what he was doing there. He said, ancient cities, lost cultures, they take me out of the real world. I'm having trouble coping. Duffy followed Kate to her tiny office above the lab and stood so close she could smell peppermint on his breath. This is a disaster area, he'd announced, surveying the boxes overflowing with pottery shards, diagrams, worn manuscripts, and equipment still covered with dirt, staring her straight in the eyes as if she herself needed salvaging. If you think that sort of talk will affect your grade, she said, you're right. I'm not here for the grade. He inspected her books, adjusting those that had toppled over. I'm just following my instincts. He wasn't the type she normally leaned toward, preferring academics, usually married or confirmed bachelors. She was into work long-term, not romance. Duffy spread his arms. Pretend I'm a rare specimen like that dog skeleton you're famous for discovering. Pretend you need to analyze me. You're too young to be a relic, but I'd classify you as a rich kid with too much time on your hands and nowhere to put them, she said, pointing to the door. I collect artifacts, not admirers. Still, that he knew about her work raised him somewhat in her estimation. The next day, she received an elaborate note on monogrammed blue stationery, apologizing for behaving like a lout and inviting her to dinner. Her colleague, Dan McGuire, who shared her office and occasionally her bed, read it over her shoulder. What do I make of this, she said. He thinks you're an intelligent, attractive woman, and he wants to give you a free meal. If I go, he'll think I'm interested in him. No sin to be interested in one of your students, said Dan. It's the way he's interested in me that's sinful, she reread the note. Looks as if you're considering it. Not at all. She crumpled the letter and deposited it in the wastebasket. I make too many slight connections. They don't speak well of me. Look at us. Dan was married to a harpsichordist and had four children. Now don't get maudlin. He patted her hand and went back to his desk. 2 days later, Duffy Strauss rang her doorbell. It was raining and he wore a yellow slicker, the kind children bring to summer camp. I just happened to be in the neighborhood, he said. I usually don't show up unannounced. Actually, I didn't expect you'd be home. Are you going to make a speech or come in? It was late. She was tired. The article she'd been working on was going badly and lay abandoned on her desk. "You look very fetching," he said. She was wearing her old high school gym suit, which consisted of a ripped midi blouse and bloomers. "Is that an antique from the 60s? "I'm sort of an antique myself," she told him. "What can I offer you? Do you really want to know? How about some milk?" In the apartment across the hall, someone was playing the recorder. It was like the hum of a machine, thin, reedy, and monotonous. Duffy Strauss stood before her as if he were a lost note, waiting to be discovered. But when she looked at his face, his expression was cagey. His hands moved to her shoulder, and then he was untying the ribbon that held back her hair. "You better cut that out," Kate said. "I have a rule about not sleeping with students." "We're not in school now," he said. "Besides, you let me in." He glanced around her apartment. The plants needed watering, and the only furniture in the room besides her roll-top desk was a tattered armchair piled with books. "I'm basically a polite person," she said. "I try to keep my life in order, even if my housekeeping isn't. What I do makes sense. This doesn't make sense." Now he stood as formally as a young Prussian soldier about to present a bouquet. "Are you dismissing me? In a way. Does that mean I should drop your course?" "No." "See you in class," he said. The next day he wasn't there. For all her high-mindedness, Kate was disappointed. She'd never been the center of so much unabashed attention. She was curious to see how far Duffy Strauss would go, how much effort he would make in her behalf. When he finally arrived late, mumbling and gesturing excuses, she felt her spirits lift, but he hurried off right after class. That night she was walking home in the fog with Dan McGuire. The traffic lights blinked woozy red and green. They hurried arm in arm through the mist. As they turned the corner, Dan said, "We're being followed." "You're being paranoid." "We are being followed," said Dan. "Turn around." Out of the corner of her eye, Kate saw a man stalking close to a building. He sprinted across the sidewalk and crouched by a parked car. He crept into the street, flattened himself against a truck, and darted over to a street lamp. Kate squinted through the fog. It was Duffy Strauss wearing his old slicker. His eyes glared like a cat's, and the slicker glistened like chrome under the lamplight. He looked pained and dislocated. She and Dan began to walk faster. "Maybe I ought to come up with you," said Dan when they reached her building. "That's all right," Kate said. "Well, if I can't protect you from midnight marauders, how about for old time's sake?" "Good night," she said. Several minutes after she let herself in, the buzzer rang. Like a boy at the beginning of a prom, Duffy appeared nervous and hopeful. "Say something," he said. She shrugged. "I'm too old to be engaged in adolescent love." But when he kissed her gently somewhere in the vicinity of her forehead, she brought him inside to bed. When he left the next morning, he looked shy and boyish and tripped over the door ledge. Kate was surprised to find herself feeling moved and foolish and not sorry at all to have her solitary existence invaded. "I'm embroiled in a serious fling," she admitted to Dan one evening when they were both working late. The office smelled of stale cigarettes and an odor of formaldehyde drifted up from the lab. "What's the story on him?" asked Dan. "He has no particular goals and refuses to worry about the future." "That's very interesting," said Dan. "Have you considered sending him to a guidance counselor?" "Don't tease," Kate said. "I'm overwrought." She paced back and forth. "Go on," said Dan. "He speaks fluent French, can recite Victorian poetry, and claims to have memorized a complete list of chemical compounds alphabetically." "He sounds like a mnemonic irrelevancy to me," said Dan. For Kate, who had been planning her future since the day she'd escaped from the Bronx with a scholarship and a torn duffel bag, immediate domestic concerns made little difference. For Duffy, small details were religion. Her clutter, her disinterest in style seemed to draw him in. Kate wasn't sure whether he was trying to reform her or cultivate her simplicity. Every night he prepared precise, tasteful meals in her tiny kitchen. Linen napkins and fresh flowers would appear on the table along with two plates carefully decorated with thin strips of veal garnished by a lone Brussels sprout or three steamed shrimp glistening next to a new potato. After several dinners served in this manner, Kate said, "This is a terrific appetizer. Can we go to McDonald's for the main course?" "How can such an educated person have such lowbrow taste?" he asked in a friendly way, but she knew, in his view, her indifference to fancy food indicated a definite lapse in breeding. "Maybe I should have done graduate work on the eating habits of trust fund hippies instead of the lowly woodland Indians," Kate said. "Why don't I write my final paper on food rituals in Manhattan and how they define the culture," he said, peering at her over the rim of his wine goblet. She had a sudden image of her mother throwing leftovers in a pot and letting them simmer for hours. "That's an anthropologist's job. The archaeologist is concerned with prehistory, with its surviving objects," she told him. "Sounds pretty dry, limiting your research that way." He began stroking her back and nibbling at her ear. "I love it when you use your professorial voice." "All right," Kate said. "Not only am I starving, but I have the weakest flesh in town. Continue what you're doing right now. Afterwards, take me out for a decent meal, and I'll approve the topic." Once Kate had planned her life in a series of ascending steps, a degree, a job, articles published in the right journals, tenure and so on, now with the advent of love, a new set of blueprints spread before her, a weekend place in the country, a dog, eventually a baby. Duffy found this puzzling. "I can hardly see past tomorrow." Until Duffy, Kate hadn't realized how much time she spent alone. So for a while, she let him putter around and arrange her life, until eventually, toward the end of the semester, he began appearing less and less for class or at her door. He'd found a new lover, the waif-like Glynis, who later decided she didn't like his attitude. She's never had a boyfriend who understands her needs," he informed Kate. "I'm teaching her to be more liberated." "Liberated," Kate repeated, "as in sex or in politics?" "You know what I mean." Almost as an afterthought, he added, "I'm really grateful to you. I've learned a lot." She felt shopworn, used up, disintegrated like ancient refuge. Paleolithic fossils and decaying monuments began to turn up in her dreams. Sometimes she thought she would never get over him, that he would stay with her like a splinter sleeping under her skin. Duffy never turned in his paper. She gave him an incomplete. Now he'd resurfaced like a perennial plant or a groundhog in spring, yet for Kate, his return had the impact of a tornado or a random act of God. Back at his house, he put Mozart on the stereo. "No minor masters for you." How could she resist him? He was still the most charming person she'd ever met. From a worn carpet bag, Duffy lifted surprises and spread them on the floor, swatches of brocaded fabric, small copper pots, a strange wooden instrument that resembled a flute, pottery, masks, and a glass bottle still filled with oil. Maybe among his souvenirs, she could piece together the puzzle of his life without her. He instructed her to touch the material to try on the masks as he strode about the apartment, pulling the curtains, adjusting a light, commenting on some recent work of art his parents had purchased. She sank down on the rug and stared at him. He was completely at ease, in command, yet she felt like a dancer. She felt dizzy and misplaced, like a dancer after a long ballet. Duffy's finds turned the elegantly restrained room into an exotic bazaar. Today, even the distorted portrait by Francis Bacon over the mantel seems celebratory. Sunlight poured in, drawing out the painting's color until the walls seemed to glow burgundy, sable, and ochre. Once, when Duffy's parents had left town, they'd made love on the rug beneath the portrait. He'd insisted they lay on a towel, lest they soil the oriental carpet. But after 6 months of wandering around Central America, Kate figured Duffy must have picked up some skills at playing it by ear. Yet here he was, organizing details around them as if he'd never left. Kate wondered as he strode back and forth, rearranging the space, if she was just another familiar object too. Reshuffling his mementos seemed to fully occupy him until abruptly he leaned towards her and placed a worn notebook in her lap as if this was the moment he'd been waiting for all along. "Listen, Kate, would you mind taking a look at this? I kept a journal, field notes, while I was living in a native village near Lima and later in the jungle. It was amazing." Kate restrained herself from asking if he liked the food. She glanced at his face, which had an unfamiliar look of urgency, and then at his notes. He'd cited his observations according to the criteria she'd set forth in class. All the terms were hers, woven in a tapestry of his own making. "It's not the distribution of objects from a dead culture that excites me," he said, "all that evidence from the grave, but the function of objects in a living community. Archaeology is too inexact a science for my tastes." "I see," Kate said, and put the journal down. Duffy continued to unpack, carefully unwrapping and stacking a set of hand-painted plates for my mother. He pulled out an erotic drawing, perfect for my father, perfume for the maid, a lace tablecloth for his grandmother, tequila for his cousin. What had he brought for her? He lifted a bulky package and tossed it on the couch. "What's that?" "Nothing really," Duffy said with a veiled look. "It's for me, isn't it?" "Here," he said, placing a square of cotton brocade in her hand. "This is for you." She laughed. "You're teasing me. I'm going to open that bundle." She crawled to the couch and snatched it down, ripping off the paper. "This is lovely," she cried, spreading a scarlet velvet skirt on the floor. The gold thread and tiny mirrors appliqued on the border caught the rays of sunlight. Duffy was quiet. In a mortifying instant, Kate realized the skirt was not meant for her. "Do you like it?" he asked, clearing his throat. Kate didn't answer. "Please keep it. I found it at an outdoor market." He paused as if turning a sentence over, "Thought maybe I'd make it into pillows, but you're welcome to keep it." Kate shook her head. "No, really, I insist." Her chest tightened, the familiar knot. Shadows deepened on the wall. Bacon's portrait leered down now, mocking her. Then there was the click of a key in the lock and impatient voices. The front door burst open. His parents arrived, eager to greet their prodigal son returned home. When they saw Kate, Mrs. Strauss said, "Oh, yes, Duffy's professor, how nice." Her tone would have been more appropriate to an announcement of botulism or the plague. Kate excused herself. Guiding her to the door, Duffy said, "Thanks for meeting me. I wanted you to see what I've been doing." He paused and shifted his weight. She noticed he wasn't looking at her directly. "I'd like to submit the notebook to you for credit so I can get back in school." "Yes, of course," Kate said, and moved toward the elevator. On Madison Avenue, autumn leaves swirled around her as she weaved in and out of nannies wheeling babies in shiny new prams, stately women swinging minor but expensive purchases, teenagers eyeing slick window displays. They barely noticed the woman moving past them, Kate rushing ahead, a woman concerned with the distribution of objects, clutching a crimson skirt which smelled faintly of other arrangements, other afternoons. Kate flung the skirt high in the air. Rippling like a blood-red banner, it was lifted by the wind and carried away. Thank you.